Hello, welcome back to Casting Nets Podcast. I'm Will Harley, joined here with my cohort in crime, Don Winsberger. Thank you for joining us today. We have our brief sort of introduction, our disclaimer that everything that we say is just our thoughts, our meanderings as we talk out and the things that we want to discuss. We hope that we don't offend you, but if we do offend you, by all means, please take a minute to drop us a line so that we can have a discussion with you and hopefully share our Lord with you, our thoughts with you, and have a chance to move on. But if you don't like what we have to say, turn us off. You don't need the aggravation. It is the holiday season, and I'm sure you have a bunch of things to do other than get aggravated at anything we might say. And so let's take a minute here and listen to some wonderful music as we get ready for our intro topic. Welcome back. Our topic for today is one that we thought would be great for us to discuss as we're coming close to the holiday season. Not only that, because when we're recording this, it actually is his day. We get to record on his day. And so today we're going to be talking about good old Saint Nick, Kris Kringle, Père Noël, Santa Claus.
Or as the Christian Reform like to call him, Satan Claus.
Or Satan Claus. There we go. And so today is just kind of a conversation. We really didn't prepare for this one all that much because we're just talking about Santa Claus and some of the traditions of Santa Claus. If you don't know who Saint Nick is, if you don't know maybe some history about Saint Nicholas, or if you want to know why do we think of St. Nicholas as this really fat guy who carries a bag and gives toys to kids, and why do we celebrate this on the 25th, and then we have another day on the 6th before Christmas Eve where we're celebrating something, maybe this is the episode you want to be listening to. Is there anything you want to give us before we jump on into to more in-depth topics?
I could serenade you with a Christmas carol, but I'll spare everybody.
Please, yes, that would be good. Anything else that you have for us?
Nope, it's just good to be here with everyone and looking forward to talking about this topic, because I, in the course of 3 decades of ministry, I've not only had people from other religious persuasions voice concerns about this, but also a Wells clergy, Wells called workers, as well as Wells families, have questions, many questions about the relationship of Santa Claus with Christmas, and is it a good one?
And I think that's a good place for us to say where we're gonna try to end up, and looking at, is this idea of Santa Claus something that we want to give to our children? Essentially, that's what we want to do. But let's start the conversation of giving some history of who Saint Nick is. Now, for those of you who don't know who Saint Nick is, and I'm going to ask that Don here throw in his 2 cents as we talk about it is, but I have the Wikipedia page up here because Wikipedia knows everything, right?
And thank you, because again, I was looking at that stuff too. When you mention that in your time, if you look at this, keep in mind with Wikipedia that Wikipedia has a variety of authors, and the authors who contribute to Wikipedia come from various backgrounds. And one of the things I noticed with Wikipedia's issue with or article about Saint Nicholas or Nicholas of Myra,
sure,
is it comes from a very Catholic viewpoint. And it's got a very Catholic slant. If you ever want to get a good viewpoint or information on people classified as saints or people, because Lutherans commemorate saints as well, where we remember them and their examples of faith, a good place is to go to Missouri Synod's website. They do have places on there, especially on the Missouri Synod Church calendar, where you can click on, like, today, St. Nicholas Day, and it will give you a wonderful, accurate historical information about these people.
And the Missouri Synod is, and by the way, the Missouri Synod is fabulous in their patristics.
Yes.
They are very, very good in their patristics. Very much going back into with their stressing of Chemnitz and many things, the patristics are a very big deal.
The church fathers. Talking about the patristics.
Right. Patristics are, and I apologize, that was a really big word. All it means is the church fathers, those people who for 1,500 years before the Lutheran Church started, had something to think about and say when they were reading the scriptures too. And so we don't throw them out. We do listen to them, and we kind of say, oh, what did they have to say? What was their opinion? Anyway. So Wikipedia, hey, that it's a good resource. Go on it. Just like you said, take it with a little bit of grain of salt. But we have a 4th century Greek Christian bishop. That's really who St. Nicholas is. Now, before you start getting it into your head that St. Nicholas is this wonderful, pristine, awesome guy, he was kind of a rough and tumble. there is some thought that he was removed from his position as bishop for a time because he decked a guy during a controversy.
This is why I like him, by the way.
Well, you know, he stood up. I forgot the guy's name.
Arius. He stood up against Arius at the Arian controversy. Arian controversy was an attack on the Trinity and on the divinity of Christ.
Yep.
And this is something I do believe is legend because it's nothing that can be really historically substantiated, but the legend has it that St. Nicholas went to Arius and slugged him.
That's the legend because Arius did not believe that Christ was God enough, was divine enough. And so Arius got a face full of the law, brought upon by the good old Saint Nick, who felt that coal wasn't good enough for his stocking, and so you have this 4th century Christian bishop who is very heavily into at least tradition says was very, very heavily into helping those less fortunate. There are tales that he rescued four sisters.
Three sisters
from becoming prostitutes by paying their dowry so that they would have something to live on in their livelihood.
And leaving the dowries, throwing the bags, three consecutive nights throwing the bags of gold into the house.
Yep. And there was also in the darker ideas of St. Nicholas, there was the tradition where he... three children were butchered, and he tracked them down, where the body parts were, and he was able to raise them through prayer. So there is that tradition as well.
Legend.
It's a legend, more of a legend but all of these legends seem to center around a guy who, for the majority of his life, felt that reaching out and working with the poor. And trying to do things for the poor was something that was his calling, and I think he did it very well. He also was claimed to be the saint of sailors because he was moved around a lot and he was forced to move around a lot. Later on in years, and this is just a side note, in the Catholic Church itself, he is the saint who has the most body parts around the world. And according to the Catholic Church, that there are more holy places that have St. Nicholas's relics, pieces of his bones, apparently in their lock boxes or wherever they keep them, than any other saint that they've ever found. So whether that's true or not, I don't know. But we have a St. Nicholas. We have a guy who loves children. Now, his day that is given to him is the sixth. And do you know why that he was given the 6th of December.
I can't say that I do. I kind of always was, I think, share it with me anyway.
I'm asking because I have absolutely no idea as well.
My big question with St. Nicholas is how did we get from these legends to having him be a part of having him be part of the December 25th celebration?
And actually,
this goes back to some of our European our European heritage, even German heritage, if I'm not mistaken.
It does. Actually, it goes back to Martin Luther. And Martin Luther, when they had the celebration of St. Nicholas, which was a celebration of really what Luther felt was an honoring of a man, honoring of the saint, as opposed to an honoring of Christ, and actually looking to Christ who motivated this saint. And so what Luther said was, instead of celebrating St. Nick's Day on the 6th, he proposed giving gifts to children in the same vein on Christmas Day, but he called it Christkind. And that he tried to coin the phrase Christkind, that we were going to be Christ, a kind of Christ,
yep,
and give gifts as Christ has given to us, and as the Magi come and give gifts to Christ 2 years later from the birth of Jesus, that we would be mimicking that behavior. Unfortunately, the date stuck, but we didn't really leave the worship or the veneration or the honoring of the man. And so instead of what some people do, celebrate St. Nick's still on the 6th, but for most of us, they grabbed that icon and they moved it to the 25th. And many, yep, many Christians now today have done what Luther has desired. We give gifts to our children as the Lord has given gifts to us, but we still cloud it and shape it into this fashion of Santa Claus, right?
And that's some things that causes some Christians concern. You know, another part of this too, years ago when I was preaching on Christmas traditions during the season of Advent, interesting to note how we, because the Saint Nicholas, Santa Claus, whatever you want to call him, was not always, in fact, the fat, jolly man with the white beard and the red suit is really an American tradition.
1939, right?
Was actually started, actually maybe a little bit earlier than that. I thought maybe in the teens, but it was started by the Coca-Cola Company.
Okay, sure.
Started by the Coca-Cola Company in advertising, and that's how we got that picture. Many of our Christmas Santa Claus traditions, or at least today, are very American as well. At least with the pictures, the marketing, all of that, we can.
Although I wouldn't go so far as to say that it's entirely, because
no,
in the German tradition, Saint Nick was very much depicted as almost Woden, one of the Germanic gods who was in charge of the wild hunt, and he would fly through the crisp night sky,
yep,
almost like an ethereal type of deal, and he was supposed to be in charge of the wild hunt. And I know that there's a lot of connection between this almost like a hunter-y type, fully laden in clothing, long beard, outdoorsman type idea of a Kris Kringle that comes from Germanic, yep, Polish descent.
If I remember correctly, too, from things looking at it, researching things years ago, that Kris Kringle was looked at more, and I think that's where it comes from, that Woden and Germanic gods and so forth, mm-hmm, more as an imposing, scary figure,
yes,
rather than...
Absolutely. One that was more willing to do harm than good, unless he saw benefit in you. But that's why there was a connection to the Yule log. That's Norse mythology, right?
Yes.
You have the long beard, very, very Norse, very, very Germanic. You know, long beards are a Germanic thing. I'm sorry for all those out there who are getting into the fad of the long beard again. Welcome to the Germanic tribes. We always wanted you back. But the longer beards are very Germanic. That's a European thing, to have long beards. And so you have this idea of that. But, you know, really, I think it comes back down to this codification of who we think of Santa Claus now. You know, Santa Claus is coming to town. At least that's the earliest one that I can remember. And that was a story written in 1939. That's why I'm saying that.
Yep.
And it might be sooner that we had this image, but to me, the codification of Kris Kringle, of Santa Claus and the reindeer and the flying through the sky and coming at 12, came from that story written in 1939. And I remember it when it came out on video, and they played it on national television, and it had really bad artistic work and was in Technicolor. But I remember, you know, I always would gather with my parents. We would watch that every Christmas because that was the pinnacle story, right? That was the pinnacle story of who Santa Claus was. And then you got a Santa Claus who after that gets all these elves, you know, because apparently we got rational and we started to think to ourselves, no, it's impossible for one guy to be able to do all of this work and make all the toys for everybody. And so we just add elves now, right? Why not add another mythical creature to the mix and throw them in there and say, well, you know, that's what they do. But elves are very Germanic, right? The idea of elves or cobblers or fairies or things of that nature, and cobblers being elves that work on shoes from the story of yes. the cobbler and the elves, yep. comes very much from Germanic history, where if you're out in the wilderness and you're living in these wildernesses and you're part of the hunt, you're interacting with all of these natural beings, these nature beings. And now you get this whole idea, this whole fantasy that comes mixing together.
What do you think is the biggest issue that some Christians have with Santa Claus being a part of the Christmas celebration?
Well, I can tell you what my biggest issue is. My biggest issue is the fact that we sing songs that he knows when you're sleeping, he knows when you're awake, he knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. We like that song. It's a catchy tune. But to me, that is bordering on omniscience. He's taking on or stealing from Christ and his ability. And then he's hedging it with a law. So because he can do these things, by God, you better be good, because if you're not, you're going to receive punishment. The whole concept to me of Santa, and like I said, this is my problem. I love Santa. I have tons of Santa figurines. I like to collect them. I love to present them for Christmas. That being said, I think the concept of Santa, though, in its form that is presented, gives more of a child this idea of, I have to do what we consider rightness, right? I have to do what is right. I have to do what my parents say. I have to live a certain way. And if I don't, I'm going to be labeled bad, and there's no coming back from that. And I think it's not only bordering on omniscience, but too much law.
You know, okay, as long as you're on that, I can't help, because it brings up a theory that I have with this. Because I've had people, parishioners, people from other denominations come and say to me, this is just, you know, this is just a vile, unpermissible facet of Christmas, that if anybody's a Christian, you don't allow this. And my theory has always been, if Christ is the center of a home, Santa Claus is not going to be an issue. And keeping with that, please share your story about your youngest.
Okay, well, first of all, I got to share the story of we have three kids in our household, and one of them's 11, and one of them's 6, and then one of them is 3, going to be 4 here in February. And my wife and I, we love Santa. That's just, we grew up on Santa. I mean, that was a thing. But my wife and I both said, we don't want the Santa that the mass media has. We want a Santa that is coming back to Christ. And so when we had children, we told them, we said, you know, Christ tells Santa if you get a toy or not. Christ tells Santa if you are worthy of having a toy. And for my two children, my two oldest, my 11-year-old and my 6-year-old, it was always, oh, we got to be good. We got to be good. So Jesus will tell Santa that we can have a present. Well, this year, my 3-year-old, she's always the more observant one. My wife says, well, you know, let's try to be the best we can, because Jesus will then tell Santa that you can have a present. And my 3-year-old, she looks at my wife and I, and she says, Jesus forgives me. I'm always going to get a present. And it was like, shoot. That didn't work well. But it was right. It was she caught on. Well, you know, I'm forgiven in Jesus, so I'm always going to get a present. There's no question I'm not going to get a present. I think it comes back down in many ways to what Luther tried to do by introducing this idea of Christkind, right? That we're not focusing on this guy who once lived and now we have this tradition about him, but we're focusing on what's the point behind it all, right? The point behind it all is God has given us the greatest gift. Why should we not gift things to other people?
And that's how that is how the practice of gift exchange, how that comes along. It's once again the reflection of God's love to us. Actually, the principle behind Christmas ornaments that are bright and shiny and reflective, because it's reflecting the light of the world, Christ.
Sure.
It's neat to see how many of our Christmas traditions, and you know what? Just to say this as well, no Christmas tradition is really perfect. No Christmas tradition is really scriptural. I might have mentioned this when we had our last podcast and we're talking about Advent. Christmas, even though it's in the church year, that was not the first holiday that was really commemorated. The church had been around a long, long time before Christians decided to commemorate the birth of Christ.
Well, and I think some of that, honestly, please correct me if I'm wrong, I honestly believe that some of why we celebrate Christmas came along because of Arius and his heresy, and because when the church was moving and the missionaries were going out, they encountered holidays, celebrations that they had to repurpose.
And also you had in the Germanic areas, the areas of Europe were very, very, as the missionaries came out, they were very, very belligerent against the teachings of the Trinity.
Well, and they were very folklorish.
And folklorish and against the teachings of the Trinity. In fact, Arianism was one of the places, or was one of the things, actually the thing that was the areas of Germany, those European countries, it found a foothold there. And that explains to me a little bit too, maybe where some of this legend came up with Saint Nicholas and decking Arius at the Council of Nicaea, because of that difficulty in that area.
It also could go into the folklore that's been stated over and over and over again, that Saint Nicholas, you know, that there's the spirit of Christmas that fell on him and gives him all these powers. You go on to Netflix and you just search for Santa Claus movie, and you'll have over and over and over how you get normal people who the spirit of Christmas embodies them, and they become Santa Claus. This is the Arian, isn't that the Arian belief of Christ? The Arian belief of Christ was that he was a man who was embodied by the divine, and that before he died, the divine left.
Yep.
And well, granted, both you and I, if we would have been there, we would have hit him too. I mean, that's just the way it is. We're that type of people. We're just that type of person.
But once again, you'll have people that come and say, well, just because of that note at all, Christians shouldn't, you know, I've had so many times, it's a sin to have Santa Claus be a part of Christmas. I've heard Christians say that, you know, we talked about some of this last week, the Christmas tree. Oh, you know, there are some people that are just dead set against that. And once again, I go, there are traditions, practices, things that we follow, none of them are perfect. And none of them are biblically mandated. And it comes back to me, at least with this, this is how I've encouraged people and guided people. When Christ is a part of the home, those other things aren't going to be an issue. Because when Christ is at the center of the home, he's going to be at the center of everything.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, and dear listener, please don't take this as I'm judging anybody. I'm not. But get off your high horse. I'm sorry. Get off your high horse. You know, I lived through the Harry Potter phase, where, you know, man, it was condemned to go and watch Harry Potter. Train your kids the difference between what is fake and a story and what is real. It's not that hard to do.
And thank you for bringing.
I lived through the Dungeons and Dragons phase where parents were just all upset because kids were going out there and trying to live the Dungeons and Dragons games, and then they were condemning Dungeons and Dragons. Take a little bit of initiative and share with your kids the difference between fiction and reality.
Yeah, fantasy and reality.
And this is the difference. You know, I love fantasy. I love fiction reading. If I have a choice to sit down and read something for my leisure time, I will be reading fiction and fantasy stuff.
And that answers a question that I've had people address to me. Well, Pastor, if you're trying to tell your children that something that's make-believe like Santa is really true, and when they find out it's not, they're going to start having questions about, well, is everything I've learned about Christ, what you're telling me, is that true or is that made up? As parents are talking about these things, once again, you know, I do think that that's a legitimate question, but once again, as parents are interacting with their children, on a daily basis, as Christ is the center of our home, no matter how you present Santa Claus to your children, when Christ is the center of your home and it's part of your daily conversations, it's part of the way you live, when a child discovers, oh, Santa Claus, this was a made-up thing, but I look at how my parents were having fun with
and
me.
They were giving us gifts as Christ gave us gifts.
That a child's not going to have a problem with that.
You know, when I was a kid, and this is just a story for whatever, but I was a kid, you know, we would go to our family reunions and we'd do our Christmas thing. And we never had a tree put up before Christmas. We talked about this for Advent last week. And it wasn't until we got home from all of those things that my mom and dad would put up the trees, because my dad said, you know, Santa brought the tree, he brought the gifts, he brought everything. When we got old enough and we figured it out, we saw my dad and mom putting it up. My dad said, you know, thank God, I don't have to do this anymore.
Well, and another thing is, 99 times out of 100, most children figure out that this is a game before the parents figure out the children realize
and
it.
And they enjoy it.
Yes.
And they enjoy it. They enjoy the fact that their parents are listening to them. They enjoy the fact that their parents are wrapping a gift and saying, hey, this is from Santa Claus to you. And then they open it and they're like, wait a second, I never put that on the actual Santa Claus list. How did he ever know? You know, eventually they figure it out. But you know what? It's okay.
And, you know, I remember, too, my parents did the same thing. And the highlight of Christmas Eve was always the Sunday school Christmas service at church, the pageant, whatever you want to call it. And I remember my mother always telling me this is what Christmas is about. not Santa Claus.
Yep.
This is what Christmas is about. Christ in the manger, God becoming human being to come and save us. This is what Christmas is about.
Now, here, answer me this. We have people that get so bent out of shape about Santa Claus, Christian families who get so bent out of shape about Santa Claus, and yet say absolutely nothing by placing the Magi at the manger. You do realize, dear listener, yes, that the Magi didn't come until 2 years after, at least.
Yeah.
He was out of the manger. They were in a home. Scripture tells us they were in a home.
The wise men, the wise men and the camels weren't present.
But you know, we always, you know, we have these things. And I think here's the rub that we all have to sort of come to terms with. And we've noticed it even in our preaching. Preaching the Gospels is so much easier than preaching the epistles. Because we like stories. We like stories. People are story orientated.
Every society, every race, every culture, stories are a part of.
Yes.
I mean, it's one of the foundations of culture.
And so we love stories. So when people say to me, and I've had a couple people say to me, you know, well, I can't believe that you would do this and have Christmas with Santa Claus and that you would like Santa Claus and do all that kind of stuff. But you know what? Those people that talk to me about that are usually the same people who have no problems going to a thriller slasher movie on Halloween. Or, you know, they have no problems watching all these other things that are on TV and they're laughing at and they think it's the same thing. They like stories, right? And if we're going to say this is an unwholesome story, when really the focus is on giving to someone else as Christ gave to us, if we're going to have such a problem with this.
Can I say something else here too? And I want to be gentle in how I say this, but this is something I've noticed in my observation. People who get so caught up in this, whether it in the legalism, you know, you can't do this, you know, put the silver cross up with Santa Claus, put the silver cross up with the celebration of Halloween. People get so caught up in this. I do notice that in their own families, there's very little gospel. It's always law motivation. Do. And this is one of the biggest deceits of Satan is that, okay, I'm coming in the name of Christ, but it's do and don't, do and don't. And Christ and do and don't they do not go together.
Yeah.
It's Christ and done.
Yep, Christ and done. And now you're freed to live, right?
Yes.
You're freed to live. And, you know, hey, embrace the kid's imagination. Embrace your own imagination. You know, how many times in the scriptures do we have Paul referring back to folklore, right? He refers back to the stories that the people know. The Psalms are sung to tunes of folk tunes, of things that people know. You know, be well read, be understanding, know the stories, and recognize that, and I think here's the other side of this entire deal. Recognize that these stories that sinful people come up with are really a deep down yearning for the true story that God provides. Because we're talking about Santa Claus. So look at him. Look at all the qualities that he has. Take Santa Claus out of it and put Christ in it. Doesn't he have those same qualities? He knows when you're awake. He knows when you're sleeping. He knows when you're bad. He knows when you're good. Now, just take out the be good for goodness sake because he's already forgiven you.
Yes.
Or any movie that you see about Saint Nicholas, about Santa Claus, and how you know, you know, the one that I think about, Freddy Claus. I don't know why I think about that, but the show Freddy Claus, where Santa Claus had a brother. Anyway.
Oh, you're thinking about the Santa Claus.
And no, it's
Fred Claus.
Fred Claus. And what is the line that he says? There are no bad kids. Well, I can picture Christ saying that from the cross. I've died for them all, right?
Yep.
I've forgiven them all. You know, so, I mean, place Christ into these things, and you can see the yearning that people have for something.
And I appreciate what you said about, don't underestimate your children, and embrace their imaginations, you know, because one of the things too is our children are so perceptive, one of the biggest lessons that our children learn from our families is immediately they pick up on a family's priorities. And once again, when Christ is a priority, they are going to filter everything else that happens in their family through that lens.
Yep. And they will recognize eventually, you know, this is something for us that mom and dad did for us to make this fun for us. But you know, we've been talking about the good sides, I suppose, and how to look at the Santa Claus things, but you know, the sinful nature does its number on even the joy. If you notice, you know, you have in all of these tales of Santa Claus, right? You have the anti-Santa Claus. And really in the old tradition, the butcher who, you know, in the old legend of Saint Nick, when he found the butchered children, the butcher who had cut up these kids, his penalty was he had to follow Saint Nick around and help in his efforts to give back. That was his penalty. And so I his name was Pete or something, if I remember correctly. It comes with that same idea of what has been come up in history, that there was the night before Saint Nick was always a night of where naughty children were taken away. And we got this idea that has come around Krampus. Krampus, or whatever it is.
They pronounce it Krampus, and we're not talking about the family that lives southwest of Cologne.
No, but it's this idea of a beast who is trying to be like Santa Claus, but is evil, right?
Yes.
And he does all these evil things. He tries to be this jolly person, but ends up falling flat and only giving bad things. Now there's movies about him all over the place and all these other things, but it's always and that's the sinful nature, right? The sinful nature always takes what is good and then has to put something bad alongside of it.
Yep.
Because our human nature says if there's something so good, there has to be something equally so bad.
Yes. I have another thought too with people who have concern about what their children, you know, and I'm glad that people have a concern about what their children believe and especially concerning Santa Claus. But to tell you maybe a personal family story of when I was growing up, I do not remember this. Maybe part of it's because now I'm 57 years old and this happened probably 53 years ago. But as I was told in my family, one of the first Christmases that we had when my family got together around my grandmother's house with aunt and uncles, and actually I was just me and one of my other cousins, and it was just us. And so my grandmother thought it was a wonderful idea that Santa Claus would show up at the house on Christmas Eve. And so she talked my uncle, my favorite uncle, into dressing up as Santa Claus, and he came in, and as the story goes, that he was holding me in his arms, and I'm just sitting there, didn't say a word, and he's talking to me, and you know, and all of this stuff, and everybody's going, oh, Santa Claus is holding you, and talking. Well, he leaves, and the first thing that comes out of my mouth was, why was Uncle Dick dressed up in that funny red suit?
Yep.
And I, you know, when I think about it, for the most part, really thinking about the minds of children, they are so much smarter than we give them credit for. Even when we're playing games with them, they have it figured out.
Yep, but they like to play the game.
Yeah, but they like to play the game.
And I think that's what we do a disservice to our children when we don't foster their imagination. And dear listener, I'm not going to tell you what to do for your holiday.
Oh, yes.
But let me just say this. Like most families, mine included, we've given our children a tablet. So we've now taken them away from actually reading books to seeing images so they never have to use their imagination. If you try to give them downtime or take away their screen time, you have kids that don't engage in play. They just don't engage in play anymore. We live in a society where unless you have mapped out their day, unless you have told them what to do, showed them what to do, engaged in how they are supposed to do it, these kids don't know how to function. Engage their imagination. When we were young, and depending on how old you are, listener, maybe this was you. I entertained myself with a box, and we made it into a fort, and we cut holes in it. And I remember when I was a kid, I made a fort so big it took up the whole living room floor, and I could crawl into many different rooms, and it got to have a second story. And when the second story impeded my dad's view of the TV, that was when it needed to come down. But duct tape in a box, that was like the greatest thing. And now look at our kids. If I can't have my mind, if I can't be engaged with a Switch or engaged with an Xbox or engaged with a tablet or mom and dad, can I borrow your phone? It's like instantly I can't do anything. Engage your kids' imagination for once.
Yes. And I think that is one of the American traditions with Christmas too. You do see programming on TV, Christmas programming, where you do see where a lot of the spirit of Christmas in America is trying to engage the imagination of children as well.
And engage the imagination of gift giving.
Yes.
You know?
One other thing that I want to share with our people, especially our parents, because I'm sure we're going to have parents that are listening that are on both sides of this issue. And I want to share with you, actually, I really think that what we're preaching on Sunday speaks to that a little bit. Again, when you're looking in Romans chapter 15, and the Apostle Paul is dealing with people in Rome who are on two sides of an issue with things that are neither commanded nor forbidden.
Sure.
And talking about, again, being single-minded, not necessarily agreeing on something, but looking at, okay, this is something that's neither commanded nor forbidden. Let's not make this a divisive issue.
Yeah.
In saying that, I want to say to our parents who are listening, no matter what side of the issue that you're on, I respect where you're at. And if you choose not to have Santa Claus as part of your Christmas celebration, I respect that. And there's not one thing that's wrong with that. And parents who do have Santa Claus as part of your Christmas celebration, I respect with that too. And once again, I encourage you in that issue too. Whether you have Santa Claus as your celebration or not, Christ always needs to be at the center of that celebration.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's what Paul says in the text that we're preaching on this Sunday.
Yeah. Essentially that all of God's promises are confirmed in Christ, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, dear listener, Don, myself, my family, we can give gifts because the greatest gift has been given to us. I don't have to worry about what I'm going to get in return. I don't have to worry if I get anything in return. I can freely give.
Thank you for bringing that up too, because one of my biggest frustrations celebrating Christmas as an older child and a young adult, my father, when I'd say to Dad, "What do you want for Christmas?" He'd go, "I got everything I need." And he'd never tell me what he wanted, and that would frustrate me. But what a wonderful lesson there of, I've got all I want because I've got all I need because Jesus has not only given me himself, but provided me with with everything.
And anything I get is for me. I mean, this year, I mean, many of the listeners maybe know, if you know me, you know, I've been hit the last 2 years pretty hard in our family. My daughter was sick, you know, not so long ago, and she came out of it by God's grace, and we had a blessing of that. And then this year, my wife had cancer, was diagnosed with cancer, went through surgery and treatment, chemo, and was declared for at least this 3 months to be cancer-free. And we're bouncing back from that. You know, it puts things into perspective. What more do I really need? I have the greatest spouse my Lord could ever have walk beside me, still with me. I have three little hellions of kids who most of the time give me more gray hair than anything else. But, you know, they are a testament to the wonder of God providing and saying, yeah, we're going to let you try this, not just once, but see how many times you can screw up with three of them. If they draw me a picture for Christmas and they come up and they give me a hug and they said, here it is, I know they just drew it that morning. They didn't think ahead. I mean, they're 3, 6, and 11. Man, I got to remind my 11-year-old to zip up his fly after he's done taking a whiz. I have to remind my 6-year-old to wash her hands after she's gone to the bathroom. I have to remind my 3-year-old that she does need to go to the bathroom. I mean, I can't expect them to remember, oh, Christmas is coming. Maybe I should prepare a gift. But that doesn't matter. Yep. I mean, they come up and they give you a hug. Or the fact that, as you have said often, you know, the fact that we roll over in the morning and our spouse is still there and says, yep, hey, honey, I love you. Wow, that is the greatest gift, yes, right? And now, because I have been freed in Christ to enjoy those gifts, I can give to them, and I can be in awe of watching them open those up and having them be happy and see those things. And you know, if I put it in the disguise of Santa Claus, who cares?
Yeah.
I don't care. You know, they don't say, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. So that's where I am on this whole idea of Santa Claus and looking at this holiday season.
And dear listeners, if you're thinking, as you're thinking about this, in the course of 3 decades and my whole lifetime, I know that there's pastors, there are Wells pastors that Christ is not a part of their, or Christ is a part of their Christmas celebration. It's a center. Santa Claus is not. I respect that. I know, of course, I mean, there are pastors' families who do. This is not just something that, it's not a clergy against the lay people. It's not a lay people against the clergy. This is an issue that affects everybody. And I think the point that we've come to here, that this is not, this need not be a divisive issue. And it isn't when we all have Christ in the center of our lives and in the center of our celebrations.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what really we need to finally come down and say, is that when you have Christ as the center and you are freed by the gospel, what more is there for you to have to worry about, right?
Yes.
What more is there to have to worry about? Well, looking ahead into our, as we're coming to the end of our discussion on Santa Claus, we probably are going to be having to look ahead here and decide where we're going to finish out our year. Now, just so everybody knows, because the holiday season lands where it lands, probably in the middle of the week with Christmas being on a Wednesday, and then with New Year's coming the week right after that, when we get to the end of December and the beginning part of January, we're not going to be having our podcast normally like we would every week. We're going to take 2 weeks off for the Christmas season. But by my calculations, that leaves us still 2 weeks to fill before the end of the year. And so our plan for next week is to talk about the catechetical life and really dealing with, since we're going to be coming into the new year, we want to give you some good skills with maybe a good way to start the year with some devotion and maybe some things to look at as we go back to the catechism, which, let's face it, as adults, we all thought we outgrew after catechism class that went on the shelf and whew, we did that. Now we know everything there is to know about the scriptures, right? So maybe we should return to that and have a discussion about a little bit of our catechisms and having a catechetical life. And then our final discussion for that, for before we leave you for the year, would be a look at the future. And so we'll have this conversation, and you'll have to wait to find out more about that, what that will be. But as we end out our time before we take a break for 2 weeks, we're going to talk about the future.
Just curious about that. Is your given name Marty McFly? Or
I don't know. That's Back to the Future, not necessarily forward to the future. But no, we'll have a good chance to talk about those two topics, and then we'll start fresh in the new year. I will be at a new place, and we will be trying some new technology to reach out and make this all work. But
I'll be at a new place too, at least two or one new place out of two. So
Well, that reminds me, there is something coming up in the new year—a conversation about vacancy work, and so we'll be discussing that too. But thank you, dear listener. Again, if you'd like to reach out to us, please do so at castingnetspod@gmail.com. Please give us a like, subscribe, listen, and just join the conversation in any way you can by sharing it with somebody else. And until next time, may God richly bless you as you prepare for this holiday season.
Merry Christmas, everyone.